Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero I'm interviewing today is Amanda Lawler. She is founder and president of Bat World, an award-winning sanctuary for all different kinds of bats. Amanda is an author of both scientific and popular literature about bats, including her most recent work, Standards and Medical Management for Captive Insectivorous Bats. Welcome, Amanda. I'm so glad you could join us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. You tell a wonderful story about the beginning of your sanctuary. You had no affinity for bats when you rescued that first one, and I think you found it on a sidewalk or something. So could you tell us what happened, and how did you warm up to bats?
Well, actually, it was in 1988, and I guess growing up, I've always been an animal lover, and I've always had an affinity for the underdog, and bats fit that description perfectly. So in 1988, I was on my way down to our bank, walking about a block and a half from our furniture store to make a deposit. I was in the middle of summer, and it was very hot. I saw a little bat on her back, basically baking alive in the sun, and I didn't know anything about bats at all. I just knew she was suffering, so I didn't want her to lay there and suffer. So I went into the bank, got a newspaper, scooted her onto the newspaper with the toe of my shoe because I was at the time believed that all bats had rabies, and she was obviously dying of rabies. So I decided to back to our furniture store and put her in a box with a dead roach and a piece of apple and a little jar lid of water. I had no idea what they ate. I just wanted to make her comfortable on her way out. But I became really curious about bats that day and went to the library and checked out a book and found out that just about everything I knew about bats wasn't true. And because of our own misconceptions over the years, we've basically succeeded in almost killing off one of the best species we have as far as insect control. So I took her home and tried to heal her wing and set her free, but her injury was permanent. So she ended up living with me for the next year and a half. And that's when I basically just fell in love with the species and decided to dedicate my life to saving them.
What was it about her and about bats in general that made you fall in love?
Well, I had been led to believe, like most people, that bats are vermin, that they're, you know, really serve no purpose, that they're dirty, you know, full of diseases, you know, like a mouse or a rat, not very intelligent. And in fact, I named her Sunshine because she was the exact opposite of everything I had been, you know, led to believe about bats. She was intelligent. She was clean. She, you know, could see, she could watch me. Everything that I thought I knew just, you know, was blown out the window. And every day she kind of told me something new. And she was just an endearing little creature. And the best way to describe the way that my encounter and the way I felt like she was like a little 2-inch monkey with wings. Basically, that was it. She's, if you could imagine a little bee with wings, it's 2 inches long, that would be a little bat.
Oh, how sweet. So lots of personality, actually pretty clean. And so the expression blind as a bat is not true at all.
Not true at all. And in fact, as far as being clean, they spend about a third of their day grooming their bodies. And in fact, when I would handle her, as I grew to finally do when I overcame my fears, as soon as I would put her away, she would groom her body to get my human or the humanness off of her because apparently I was the dirty one. So.
And so in general now, what are some of the reasons to save bats?
There are just so many reasons. When you consider first that bats make up 1/4 of all mammal species on Earth, I mean, that's a huge number. And the things that they control, they control an enormous amount of products. We get mangoes, kiwi, guava, papaya, almonds, a lot of different spices, sisal for rope. There's actually over 400 different commercial products and 80 different medicines that come directly from bats or are obtained through pollination and seed dispersal from bats. Bats protect crops. If we didn't have insectivorous bats protecting our night skies and our agricultural fields, we would end up paying $9 for an ear of corn. In fact, in Texas, free tails are known as the billion-dollar bats because that's the amount of pesticides we would be forced to use to control the insects that they control for us. So they do a huge amount for us. And if that weren't enough, 98% of all rainforest regrowth comes from seeds that have been spread by fruit bats. That's 98%. And a lot of people don't realize that the rainforest is basically the lungs of our planet. So if we don't have the rainforest, we all disappear. So there's so many things. And one more example is there's a bat in Africa that pollinates the tree of life. And the tree of life is home to over 400 different plants and animal species. So if that one bat disappears, the tree of life will disappear. 400 other different plants and animals will also disappear, and there's no telling what relies on those things for survival. So they really do hold a huge key in keeping our environment together. They're absolutely critical to our environment.
Yeah, and you have a ton more information on your website about that. So could you talk about the beginnings of Bat World Sanctuary? How did you go from saving that one bat to wanting to save all of them?
Well, my mother and I had a furniture store together, and that's where I was making the deposit from our furniture store. So my mother and I had talked about, you know, maybe converting the furniture store into an educational center, because we both were so enthralled with bats and how much they did for us and how little people knew, and so we wanted to help educate. Unfortunately, she passed away, and so after she passed away, I just liquidated the business and created the Bat Sanctuary, and started rescuing more bats, started doing educational programs, et cetera. Then in 1994, I founded Bat World Sanctuary, which is the nonprofit that we have today. And we've expanded that now into worldwide rescue, and we have rescue centers, you know, pretty much around the United, or all over the United States. And so it's really just expanded from there. It was a very, very difficult start because late 80s, early 90s, there was no internet. There was just word of mouth and, you know, basically the local paper and things like that. So, and people were not very open to learning. Now with the day and age of the internet, it's so much easier because, you know, word can be spread so easy and the truth can get out there so much quicker. But it was really rough. And so for the first, 10, 15 years, I took out loans. I kept remortgaging because I owned the building. I kept just remortgaging the building to stay afloat. And finally, things started getting easier and easier as the word spread. And we started rescuing more and more bats throughout the United States, and then it just went global. And so that's where we are today.
Yeah, you have a really unique model, and it seems to be really effective. You've got these satellite rescue, rescue centers or people that can help if someone finds a bat or an injured bat. Can you explain how that works and how that got started and where it's at today?
Well, it got started back when, back in the early 90s when I realized that there was no way I could do all this alone. And at the time I had also purchased a building that had a colony of about 50,000 bats in it, wild bats, and the building was kind of an old dilapidated building, and the man wanted to destroy the bats and sell the building. Mm-hmm. So I just bought the building to protect the bats instead, and would rescue orphans. I have rescued orphans from there every summer and cared for them and started learning more, and then realized I could teach people during this period of time. So, and rehabilitators wanted to learn, so wildlife rehabilitators. So I created classes. We called it Bat World Boot Camp, where people would come during orphan season and spend a week or two with us learning how to care for orphans. They would go back, and from those people, we saw people that had, you know, just a tremendous amount of ability, and I'm like, we should be able to use those people in their areas to rescue. And so that's kind of how the whole thing started. So we just started, over the years, we started collecting more and more names and more individuals, and then more people wanted to sign up. And so now we have a locator rescuer list on our website. Not all of those people are certified by us, but the vast majority of people are really good that are on there, and they specialize in bats, or at least offer to rescue and transport bats to other people. And so when someone finds a bat, they can go to our website, which is batworld.org, click on the link that says Found a Bat, follow the prompts, and then they'll get to the locator rescuer page where they enter their zip code, and then every rescuer who is within 500 miles of them will pop up.
Mm-hmm. So I love Bat World Boot Camp. Oh, my God, that sounds so fun. so if someone, say, they find a bat in their attic or something, is that something that where they could reach out to you for?
Definitely. We get calls and emails, you know, and social media contacts as well on bats that are found all over the place. In fact, if you go to our rescue log at batworld.org, you'll see some of the rescues we do and the odd places bats are found and the end result, et cetera. But, yeah, if someone finds a bat in their attic and they're freaked out or don't know what to do, they can go to our Found a Bat page. It'll give them step-by-step instructions on how to safely contain the bat without touching it, because we don't want anyone to touch any wild animal with bare hands. And then they can use our Locate a Rescuer page to find the closest rescuer and then arrange transport so that the bat can be taken to a rescuer. There's a lot of times when bats don't need any help. Well, bats naturally roost in trees during the day. A lot of people don't think they do that, but they'll roost right out in the open, you know, feeling the warmth of the sun. And we get calls about that, too. Those bats are perfectly fine and just need to be left alone. But we're here for, you know, no matter what. If a bat is in need or someone has a question, then we're here to answer it or help in any way that we can.
Is it actually bad to have a bat in your attic? I mean, would it be okay to just leave it there?
Well, there's always a potential for a colony to develop, but most of the time when bats are found in attics as well as basements, it's during the winter when bats have gone to hibernate. Some bats will choose to hibernate in attics and as well as basements, especially in the Northeast, and it's absolutely fine to leave them there as long as they don't have access to the inside of the house. They're going to stick around and provide insect control for your yard. They don't chew on wood or wire or anything like that. They do leave droppings, but if it's just one or two bats, it's not even an issue to deal with most of the time. And we do have a lot of people that just are happy to have them in there. The U.S. is kind of one of the only states that doesn't really realize the value of bats, countries. We, just as an example, in Scotland, the real estate value of a home or a cottage or a castle goes up if there's a colony of bats occupying the attic. So the U.S., of course, we don't
really
want that at all. Yeah, it actually increases the real estate value of the property. Most people who don't want bats in their attics or any place like that, we have humane exclusion methods on our website where you can humanely exclude the bat, mount a bat house on the outside of your house, and that way the bat still has a place to live. He'll still stick around and provide insect control, and he'll be out of your house. So you don't really want to share close living quarters with any wild animal, bats included. But a lot of people are fine with a bat living in their attic, a bat or two.
That's a wonderful idea. So I've been going over your website, and I really want to recommend it because I learned so much from it about bats. And I was wondering if you could talk about some of the common myths about bats that we have, and like bats are blind and some of those things that just aren't true that we grow up repeating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and hopefully I can remember. Typically, there are five things that people think about bats that aren't true. And, of course, one is that they're blind, and they aren't. They all have pretty good eyesight. Most can see just about as well as we can. Some can see even better because they have eyes that are equipped for night vision, a little bit like a cat. Fruit bats in particular that have the really large eyes have excellent night vision. Insectivorous bats can see, but they also have the added ability of echolocation, which helps them navigate through total darkness without bumping into anything. So that may be why some people think bats are blind, is because the insect bats have tiny little eyes and huge ears, and they navigate, you know, through the night by using echolocation. But they're not blind. They don't try to get caught in hair. A lot of people think that they try to get caught in human hair, and I have no idea where that myth came from, but it's not even remotely true. In fact, a bat can avoid one human hair in total darkness. If it's hanging there, he can swerve around it, so there's no way they're going to get caught in any reason. They're not related to rodents. In fact, they're more closely related to primates than anything else. They're in the great order of Archonta, which includes lemurs and primates and humans. So they're more closely related to us than they are to rodents, if you want to get down to the basics. They don't all carry rabies. We always caution people that any bat that's found on the ground or that is easily reachable could be sick. 99% of the time, that's an injured bat or an orphan bat or, you know, a bat that's been blown down from a strong storm. But the 1%, you know, could be rabies, and you don't want to take any chances. Bats actually contract rabies less than 1 out of 1,000. The average is 0.5%. So the vast majority of bats are not rabid. Skunks, raccoons, coyotes, and foxes come in ahead before bats. Bats are fifth on the list of the normal animals that can contract and transmit rabies. A lot of people think that because bats are so tiny that it's fine to pick them up with bare hands because they won't have, you know, their teeth are not going to be very sharp or long and they can't do any damage, and that's not even remotely true. What I usually tell children is the smaller the animal, the sharper the teeth. So any bat you try to pick up may be afraid, it may bite you in self-defense, and if it bites you, it has to be tested for rabies. That's all there is to it. Rabies is a matter of life or death, and so we always caution people, protect yourself, protect them, never rescue a bat barehanded. So we always recommend using gloves, a cloth, a towel, even a dustpan or a paper cup, whatever's handy, but just don't use your bare hands.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, bats are just like any other animal. They don't all carry rabies, but they can contract it just like all other mammals.
I was traveling in South America once, and I heard about vampire bats going after somebody's cows or their horses or something. And so I was told to be, you know, wary of the vampire bats. Is that a real fear? Tell me the story about vampire bats.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because that was number five, and I had left that out. A lot of people think that, that all bats are vampires, but that's not even remotely true. There are over 1,100 species of bats on Earth, and only three of those are vampires. 70% of the world's bats eat insects. Most of the other 30% eat pollen and nectar and fruit. There's a species that eats fish, another species that eats frogs, and there are three species out of 1,100 that do drink the blood of other mammals, and they are vampires. They're limited to Latin America. They're very afraid of people. They're about the size of a package of M&Ms, a small bag of M&Ms. You could stomp your foot and they'd fly away. They're very timid. They get their blood meals from cows and chickens and sheep and things like that. And what they'll do is they'll fly over, they'll take a little nick with their teeth, and then lap about a teaspoon of blood out and fly back home. So they're not, you know, it's icky. They're basically the parasite of the bat world. But when you compare that to other animals that actually kill their prey and eat it, you know, you have to look at it that way, too. The prey survives. They, of course, can transmit rabies, just like all other bats and all the other mammals can. But the vampire myth has just been blown way out of proportion by Hollywood and countless movies and things like that that just make it horribly icky. A lot of people don't realize there's also a bird that's a vampire that survives on blood, but you never hear about that. So.
No, you don't. I didn't know about that bird.
That's pretty odd.
Yeah, so fascinating. You mentioned to me that you're in the middle of a large bat rescue, and I know you can't go into the details of it, but can you tell us kind of how does a rescue unfold?
Well, we received word on social media that a group that was closing that had been open for 20 years and basically had a traveling exhibit of bats. They would do educational programs around the United States and take bats to places, to programs, and also have displays where people could pay and come in and look at the bats. And when we found out they were closing, we were extremely worried about the bats that were there because a lot of times in the zoo community, there are bats that aren't as well respected. When the big bats, the ones with the 6-foot wingspans that are really large, that only eat fruit, are the most, I guess, coveted, and that's what people really like to see. There are other bats that are more common. They'd be like the sparrows of the bird world, and they reproduce like crazy in zoos. They are leaked into the pet trade. They're given to research. They're so great a number of them that nobody really wants them. And so we were really concerned that all of those common bats would end up being euthanized because zoos are saturated with them. So we have stepped up to and asked, you know, to receive all those bats so that nobody has to be euthanized. And we're still waiting to get them here safely. There are going to be probably close to 100 that are coming to us. So it's not going to be an easy venture, and we're in the process of creating more food troughs and upping our food budget and everything else as we speak. These are all fruit bats that are coming, but we're not at liberty to talk about anything else right now on that. That we're just waiting, hope they get here safely so they can be retired and have a lifetime sanctuary with us.
And so at your sanctuary, are the bats enclosed in a huge enclosure, or are they free to fly around and then come home to roost? How does that work?
Well, the bats that are here are all those that can't be released back to the wild. They're either permanently injured, or their flight has been impeded by a smaller injury that makes them vulnerable to, you know, prey by hawks and owls and things, and they wouldn't also be able to forage and find food on their own. That's the insect bats. The fruit bats that are here, there are not native to the U.S. They've been brought over by zoos decades ago, and so they've been bred in zoos until there are so many, so great a number that, like I said, that leaked into the pet trade and things like that. So we rescue them from the pet trade, we rescue them from research, and as well as being retired from zoos. Those bats can't go back to the wild because they're not native to the country, and they've been in captivity, and, you know, all wildness has basically been bred out of them. Over the decades, the insectivorous bats that we receive, we get as many back to the wild as possible because we don't, you know, we have large areas, large flight enclosures, indoor, outdoor. They get to experience nature as best that they can, but they won't be able to survive if they're able to go back outside. So yeah, the enclosures are indoors, and we just clean up after them every day.
It sounds like a lot of work, but a labor of love. Is there anything else that you want to tell people about bats or how to help you or something that people can walk away with in order to, like, just know more or be more helpful about bats?
Oh, thank you. Well, we would love for people to visit our website and learn more. There's an educator's page there. You know, if people wanted to get more involved and even just educate their own community by learning and soaking up all the information they can, and maybe even just writing a letter to the editor in your local paper, that helps to spread the word, or posting to your Facebook page or anything like that just to get the information out there, because knowledge is power, and the more people who know how great bats are, the more bats will be saved. We also, if people aren't convinced from that, then they can join our Facebook page, or they can watch our live bat cams, which are on 24/7. We have 5 cameras that people can watch, and you can watch us clean the cages in the morning, or you can watch the fruit bats play with their toys and swing on ropes and eat their fruit and fly and play with each other, you know, live 24/7. And you can also sponsor a bat if you'd like to. We have what's called an Adopt-a-Bat program where you can receive a package of educational information. You can pick out the bat that you'd like to sponsor, and you get your name on a certificate. A lot of people do that as Christmas gifts and birthday gifts. We can add a personal note, whatever you'd like, we'll put on there. And that helps to bring in funding to help us rescue more bats. We are a nonprofit. We're volunteer-based, and we've gotten where we are right now solely through public donations and some grants. Some great foundations have contributed to us, but 90% of it has been through public support. So we really appreciate everything the public can do to help.
That sounds so wonderful, a bat cam where you can watch the fruit bats. It sounds really fun. Another way to spend my time.
Yeah, I catch myself watching the bat cams on occasion, and I just get sucked right in, even though I've just been in there giving treats. I come back out, and then I watch them discover the treats I've left in their little treat cups, and I just get, before I know it, 30 minutes have passed, and I'm like, what am I doing? I've got work to do.
Yeah. Amanda Lawler, thank you so much for your time today. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at batworld.org. It is really so, so, so informative. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Thanks, and bye-bye.